Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. Happy you could join us today. We had a wonderful day yesterday. We did a two-hour public access class about muscles and how to look at muscles, how to use that information to help trainers and people in sports and spa owners and people who are exercising. So if you missed that, it is on our website. Just go to the front page of that website and you can find the information. Also, if you want to download the muscle management software that we're making available to the public, that's also there, and you can register it right there on the site. If this is the first time with us, be sure and let us know if you have any trouble downloading that. Sometimes we need to provide you a nutrition program just sort of to get your computer started. I'm Sherry Edwards, should have said that to you already. And we are being sponsored today by the Sound Health Research Institute. And that's a really important thing today, especially because we are going to be talking about fracking. The idea of taking 64 poisons in gallons of water and, I don't know, stuffing it down into Mother Earth and making gas and shale come up so they can capture it. They're saying in our area, and if you're with us watching the show, and by the way, if you want to listen to the show at Blog Talk, it's 347-850-1407. The audio is usually better there, although we have tried today to get the audio up and running so it's good for everyone. And for those of you who are on Blog Talk, go to the chat and you can see a link and a password where you can join us in watching the show. It's important today because we're going to be listening to, showing, sharing a movie. And if you're with us on Blog Talk, you can also, I said that wrong, if you're with us on WebEx, whoever is opening your mic, please close your mic because I get echo. Okay, I closed it for you. If you're with us, you can raise your hand or you can put a little comment in the chat box on WebEx. There's also a chat box on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to make a comment, I think a lot of you will want to make a comment. I'm particularly interested in this because our little town is being threatened. We have about 1,000 people in this town, 2 gas stations, a florist shop, and a funeral home. Well, there's a barber shop, but it's a very small place. And there's been demonstrations here against fracking, because they've come in, well, this big real estate company came in first, and they started buying up all the properties, even the rundown, ratty old places, and nobody could figure out what these people were doing. So they're sort of slapping on a new coat of paint, making it look wonderful, and now we have found out the real reason. The organization behind all of this, Halliburton, has decided to make Albany, Ohio, little Albany, Ohio, the fracking capital of the world. They don't really care what's really going on, and you listen to our state government, and they say, well, it's creating jobs. Well, that's like paying somebody to rape somebody, to rape a woman, and say, okay, I just created a job. Fracking Rapes Mother Earth. And you can see, those of you looking, Albany, Ohio fracking protest, cops meet protesters at fracking waste dump. Here's one, Ohio insurer won't cover damage from fracking, so they already know it's going to be causing damage. Star-studded Albany anti-fracking rally held. Now, not only does it destroy Mother Earth, it stinks. So we are in a predicament right now. Do we stay in our building, and we're the largest building in the whole community? We're an old school up on the top of this hill. I don't think I want people to come here to take classes or to be at our clinic if we are going to be turned into fracking wells and stinky air. So I decided to look at what was really going on. Now, it really bothers me that the insurance companies won't even cover the damage, but the politicians are saying, that's okay. We're creating jobs. Doesn't matter if the jobs we're creating are causing extreme problems. It's like we had people come through here on open mine coal, and they cut down all the trees and started digging into the ground and creating these coal mines, and the land started slipping and the streams got polluted. So I just need some help making the decision as to whether or not we should move out of here. So we're going to be watching a movie, and it starts out kind of slow with this hippie guy talking about his land and what's going on, but it gets better and better. So here goes.
I'm not a pessimist. I've always had a great deal of faith in people that we wouldn't frenzy or rage or greed. We figure out a solution without destroying the things that we love.
The Subcommittee on Energy and Minerals will now come to order.
There are numerous deep shale gas basins in the United States which contain trillions of cubic feet of natural gas.
In fact, North America's natural gas supply is so plentiful it has been described recently by some experts as a virtual ocean of natural gas. We believe the potential from these four major shale basins is enormous, and it is a game changer not only for America's natural gas industry, but also potentially for our nation, our economy, and our environment.
I'm here today representing the 30 member states of the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Commission, who produce 99% of our domestic oil and gas. Studies and surveys by GWPC, EPA, and IOGCC over the last 11 years have found no real credible threat to underground drinking water from hydraulic fracturing. Recently, however, there has been concern raised about the methods to tap these valuable resources. Technologies such as the practice of hydraulic fracturing have been characterized as environmentally risky and inadequately regulated. Press reports and websites alleging that six states have documented over 1,000 incidents of groundwater contamination resulting from the practice of hydraulic fracturing. Such reports are not accurate.
And it's my firmly held view, and also that of IOGCC, that the subject of hydraulic fracturing is adequately regulated by the states and it needs no further study.
Thank you for this opportunity to provide an overview.
Thank you.
Thank the committee.
Thank you.
And thank you, always.
You don't know what you just thanked him for.
Yeah.
Hi. My name is Josh Fox. Maybe I'll start at the beginning. This is Dick Cheney. No. Maybe I'll start at a different beginning. This is my house. It's in the middle of the woods, tucked away on a dirt road in a place called Milanville, Pennsylvania.
Very modern.
The house was built in 1972 when I was born. My parents and their hippie friends built it, and my family and my brothers and sisters and I grew pretty much the same way I did, little by little. There's a stream that runs down the property, connects to the Delaware River. I've been learning more and more about how water is all connected. In 1972, the year I was born, Pete Seeger and a bunch of banjo-playing freaks in the Upper Hudson Valley reminded New York City that if they polluted the Upper Hudson, especially the watershed areas, that New York City's drinking water would be ruined.
This land is made for you and me.
In 1972, Richard Nixon signed the Clean Water Act into law. It was an era of environmental progress. The Cold War was on, but there was a concept of leisure time and leisure suits. Computers and technology were supposed to bring about the 4-day work week, and everyone was going to have plenty of time romping around the fields and swimming in the rivers. In New York City, they were building this, but 100 miles upriver in Moundsville, Pennsylvania, on the banks of the Delaware, we were building this. My first word was hammer. But it's 2009. One day I got a letter in the mail. It was from a natural gas company. The letter told me that my land was on top of a formation called the Marcellus Shale, which stretched across Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio, and West Virginia, and that the Marcellus Shale was the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. I could lease my land to this company, and I would receive a signing bonus of $4,750 an acre. Having 19.5 acres, that was nearly $100,000 right there in my hand. Could it be that easy? You've probably seen ads on television hailing natural gas as the clean burning transition fuel.
American shale basins contain an ocean of natural gas.
What I want is to use our resources in America. It's cheaper and it's ours. It's ours.
What would it mean if the United States and the rest of the world adopted natural gas as the fuel of the future?
We've cracked the code for natural gas supply.
And what I didn't know was that the 2005 energy bill pushed through Congress by Dick Cheney exempts the oil and natural gas industries from the Safe Drinking Water Act. They were also exempt from the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Superfund law, and about a dozen other environmental and democratic regulations. And when the 2005 energy bill cleared away all the restrictions, companies like Encana, Williams, Cabot Oil and Gas, and Chesapeake began to use the new Halliburton technology, and they began the largest and most extensive domestic gas drilling campaign in history, now occupying 34 states. The method of gas drilling they use is called hydraulic fracturing, or fracking. It blasts a mix of water and chemicals 8,000 feet into the ground. The fracking itself is like a mini earthquake. The intense pressure breaks apart the rock and frees up the gas. In order to frack, you need some fracking fluid, a mix of over 596 chemicals, from the unpronounceable to the unknown to the too well known. The brew is full of corrosion inhibitors, gelants, drilling additives, biocides, shale control inhibitors, liquid breaker aids, viscosifiers, liquid gel concentrates. On the side of that frack fluid truck, it should say, just add water. Each time they drill a well, they need between 1 and 7 million gallons of water. Each time they go back and frack an existing well, they need an additional 1 to 7 million gallons of water. They can frack a well up to 18 times in its life. They started out west, New Mexico, Colorado, Texas, Wyoming, Oklahoma, and in the south, Arkansas, Louisiana, Alabama. 450,000 wells, times 18, times 1 to 7 million gallons, is something like 40 trillion gallons of water, all of it infused with the 596 chemicals in the fracking fluid. And now they're coming east. They're proposing 50,000 gas wells along a 75-mile stretch of the Delaware River, and hundreds of thousands more across New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. From 1972 until now, my whole life, all this has been protected.
You may dial anytime. Beth, may I take a message?
Okay, sure. This is Josh Fox. I'm looking to see if we could interview someone on the subject of natural gas extraction, hydraulic fracturing.
The best thing to do would be to send an email with your request. Halliburton Corporate Affairs.
Did I just talk to you?
It's Scott Halliburton. How can I help you? Record your message at the tone.
I'd love to find somebody to interview at Halliburton. So if you please call me back, I'd really appreciate it.
Please leave a voice message for Boeing Chesapeake Energy Corporation, the nation's leading producer of natural gas. Okay,
What's 405 area code?
Oklahoma.
I'd be interested to see if there's any way to get an interview with T. Boone Pickens, to see if there's any possibility of...
Okay, well, I'm going to have to transfer you to... I've reached Cabot Oil and Gas.
Please leave a name and I will return the call.
After the tone, please record your message.
Who is the audience for this?
General public.
I think we'll decline, but thanks for calling.
You know, I'm not sure how many of you have direct experience with streams. When I was growing up, we could run up and down the stream for miles, for hours and hours on end. I mean, the moment the stream takes a bend, you can walk 10 paces back and it looks like a different place. This is a place I know. It's a place that runs through my mind. And it's always there. It feels to me like it's the source of all life. And it is. You need water for life. The closest they were drilling to me was in a place called Dimmock, Pennsylvania, about 40 miles from the New York-Pennsylvania border in the Susquehanna River Basin. A company called Cabot Oil and Gas from out of Houston had drilled over 40 wells in just under a few months. It's a small place with no major highways, a place where you could easily forget the world, forget yourself, disappear completely. I was going there because I'd heard a lot of complaints. And because I'd heard the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection had said that everything was going fine. The story of Dimmock starts with a frantic series of distress calls from Pat Farnelli. If Dimmock had a town square, she'd be standing in the middle shouting for help.
Everywhere there's a gap in the trees, there's a well. There's like 10. Sometimes it bubbles and hisses when it comes out. So I highly recommend that you do.
You want to drink it?
I won't drink it. When Cabot and them came in to get the water and they were telling me it was okay to drink, I said, well, here, go ahead and drink it. And they wouldn't drink it. There were days when 4 kids were out of school sick. Everybody was sick, including me. We were all, our stomachs were really, really acting up, couldn't handle eating anything for over a month, right? And then Jean, next door, talked to me at church and said, did you notice anything funny about your water? Our well's gone bad. The maze, they have bad water, and they've got a newborn in the house.
My next trip was just up the road to Ron and Jean Carter's. They had a gas well in their front yard. Shortly after the well was drilled, their water started bubbling and fizzing. It turned out to be natural gas.
I told them that I wasn't happy, that our water was good before they started drilling, and when they got done, it was bad. We should ask if we could prove that it was because of them. And my wife asked the guy if he could prove that it wasn't. He wouldn't talk to her anymore. We lived here 40 years and the water never had a problem with the water. And they drilled. After they drilled, the water was bad.
My next trip was just up the street. Norma Fiorentino's water well exploded on New Year's Day.
You're kidding! This is my daughter-in-law calling. She's saying there's a special on at noon.
DEP says Cabot Oil and Gas has polluted more than a dozen water wells drilling for natural gas in Susquehanna County.
Well, I've lived next to these people for 30 or 40 years, and we're good friends, all of us, and we just have the same problem.
DEP, Cabot guys are out here, and I was talking to them about it. I said, you guys said this water's safe for my mother to drink. I said, I'll be right back. I'm going to go get you a glass of water. And they all put their head down, DEP and everybody put their head down and said they wouldn't drink it.
Mason, where's the phone?
on my tour of Dimmock as Debbie May.
No helmet, no bike. I understand. Anthony, you should have a helmet on too. Go for it. And in the beginning of November, our water turned color. And it started tasting funny, like metallic-y. And then it turned brown, and then it looked like mud. Cabot sent Quantum Labs out to test it, and the guy looked at it and said, don't drink it, don't shower in it, don't do your laundry, don't do dishes, don't do anything in it.
And they put, so this is your water well down under there.
Mm-hmm. And they put that pipe thing on it.
And they're venting gas off through this.
Yeah.
The other thing that was bothering Debbie May, is something that was happening with her animals.
Sorry, they don't smell fine.
Their hair was falling out. And one of her cats was projectile vomiting.
We have three cats that have an angel.
And then when you said this to the DEP, what did they tell you?
They told me I clean with too much Lysol.
Uh-huh.
And I told one of Cabot's attorneys about it, and he told me that it comes from telephone poles.
So has the cat been out playing with the telephone poles?
The cat doesn't go outside ever.
So his hair's falling out?
Yeah. And he's losing weight.
Since basically the same time?
Yeah.
Hi. Our water was perfectly fine. And, like, right after we started drilling, cocaine and stuff like that all went in it. But at one point, we could actually, like, light it on fire. Put the thing in, shake it up in the jug, and put a match around it and just light it up.
What's going to happen to my kids how many years from now? You know, and then, it wasn't their fault. You know, they didn't do it.
Yeah.
They didn't pollute the water.
From the cases of Pat, Ron, and Jean, Norma, and Debbie, it was clear that something had gone terribly wrong in Dimmock. But there was something else. I kept hearing reports of a family that could supposedly light their water on fire, a family who wasn't speaking to the press. I wondered why, and I wondered if I could talk my way in. They didn't want their faces to be on camera, so I ended up taking pictures of their feet. They did show me their water samples, however. They told me, listen, I know you want to see us light our water on fire, but we can't do it right now. Basically, we've capped our water well. We no longer use it, and we're afraid to turn it on. If we turn it on, it's possible that it could explode or it could catch our house on fire. So even though it's a pretty spectacular thing, we can't do it for you. I could feel myself getting sucked in deeper and deeper and deeper. And then I got a phone call.
Not gonna do anything. Nobody cares because of the holy dollar that's rolling in.
Yeah.
And it's wrong. It's wrong. I don't care. You're taking a big risk yourself going around doing what you're doing. Money is not worth it. And I'm worried for my life. And I'm gonna be honest with you. So.
I went across the road to see if I could interview the people who called me, or maybe just to say hi. I didn't get to say hi. But a man came to the door. He spoke to me hastily, and he was nervous. He handed me a jar. I said, what's this? He said, it's bad stuff. I said, what do you mean, bad stuff? He said, that's about as bad stuff as you can get. Take some. Find out what's in it. Apparently, they were buying this hack of me being a documentary filmmaker. I guess because you have a camera in your hand, you know what you're doing. So somebody thrusts a jar of contaminated something into your hand, and they say, hey, take this. Figure it out. I had an inkling of what this stuff was. I'd heard reports of oil and gas wastewater, known as produced water, the water that comes back up out of the ground that's contaminated with the fracking fluids being dumped illegally onto fields and into streams. And I'd heard of workers who had chemical burns on their hands and faces. And here I was, being handed a jar of a mysterious yellowish, brownish liquid. I needed more information, so I called the number again.
I mean, all the things that you said about that the jar that you gave me just got me kind of curious. And, you know, without any naming any names, I don't know anything about anything, but was that was being dumped out in some place that it wasn't supposed to be, like a stream or a field or something?
Yes.
All right, and that's why it's important to find out what's in there?
Yeah.
All right, and if I were to be able to analyze that, would you think that'd be a good thing?
Yes.
I was starting to compile a list of things that happened in Dimmock. Water trouble, health problems, hazardous explosive conditions inside the house, destruction of land, lack of confidence in state regulatory commissions, a feeling of having been deceived, a feeling of powerlessness, dead or sick animals, the difficulty of obtaining good information about gas drilling, and the idea that there's a cover-up taking place. In other words, a total loss of normal life. Who knows if they're right? I don't. It's all speculation. But these citizens certainly felt as if they'd been wronged and that there was no one for them to complain to. On my way to drop off the jar at a water testing lab, I said goodbye to my $100,000. Even more worrisome to me was the knowledge that everyone all around me had been getting these leases in the mail, and a lot of them at least already. One thing was resoundingly clear. If the industry's projections were correct, then this would be the end of the Catskills and the Delaware River Basin as we knew it. And it would mean a massive upheaval and redefinition of all of New York State and Pennsylvania. But there was no drilling in my area yet on either the New York or the Pennsylvania side of the Delaware. New York State had commissioned its Department of Environmental Conservation to do an environmental impact study, and the Delaware River Basin Commission, which controlled my area of Pennsylvania, had not decided whether or not it wanted to allow gas drilling in sensitive watershed areas. It stirred up something else in me, the need to find out what was going on. Was Dimmick an exception or the rule? And how was I going to find out? Was I actually going to become a kind of natural gas drilling detective? Okay, I guess.
Wells and places where people have drilled. Mike Markham and Marsha.
Well, you be careful, because that one's known to nip butts. And it pinches pretty good.
I keep the camera over my butt now.
Yeah.
And it's gurgling.
Oh, wow. So that's the sample.
This is, it's all settled out.
Right.
But that's what our water looked like.
That came out of, just out of the tap?
Out of the tap.
Looks like mud water.
So in 3 weeks, they contacted Mike by phone and said, we've tested your water. There's nothing wrong with your water.
With this.
There's nothing wrong with the water that can be affected by the oil and gas production in your area.
So what have you been doing?
We put in our own tank and he hauls water every week.
I've got 2 500-gallon tanks. And I go to town once a week and buy water.
It's a coin-operated thing.
Yep.
So I got to put in $15 worth of quarters.
Purpose of this letter is to inform you that Noble Energy has contracted LT Environmental to conduct an investigation of possible natural gas impact on water well in the vicinity.
Again, I was a little disappointed in the state. I mean, obviously we have a problem here. 2 weeks ago, they had the meeting, and I prepared a statement kind of outlining everything. You know, the director of the oil and gas, or acting director of the oil and gas, said, next question.
That was Dave.
Neil Neslin.
Yeah, he kicked us out of his office 2 days ago. So is there like a theme to your documentary? Do you have a message you're trying to get across with it?
I apologize very much for your inconvenience. I wish you good luck with your documentary.
Okay.
I'd be happy to talk to you off the record with some background information if that's helpful, but I just can't do it.
All right, well, we'll call you.
Okay.
All right.
Again, my apologies. Good luck. Good day.
All right, thanks.
Yep.
At one time when we were going through all the gurgling in the well, I decided to put a plastic bag over the wellhead. And with minutes, it filled up that bag. So I closed off the bag and I stuck a fuse in it. And I thought, this might be real stupid. So I came in and I told Marcia, I said, why don't you dial 911? And if this doesn't go right,
Hit the other one.
So I got this bag of who knows what,
uh-huh.
and I lit it, and it started floating towards the road, and I thought, oh, no, truck is going to come, I'm going to blow up a truck.
For those who are just listening on Blog Talk, this man is lighting his tap water on fire.
Let's just give it a second. Whoa, Jesus Christ.
The whole sink caught on fire.
That's the best I've got. I smell hair.
Oh, damn. Can I try it?
Yeah.
Shall we get that in the frame? Don't drink this water.
They did it again.
That one was kind of spooky.
That even surprised me. And I've been lighting that water quite a bit. It's really upsetting, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it's not supposed to do that.
Now they're outside getting water. They're taking samples that they showed was radioactive. They're taking them to get tested. Jesse and Amy Ellsworth.
You found us and everything.
Right on. Looks like a new
one. Those are all wells.
Those are all the wells.
Yeah.
The red.
Yeah.
So that's where we live.
That's why it's called the red zone.
Yeah.
New information tonight on a story you almost have to see to believe.
That's right. Flames shooting from faucets inside a home in Fort Lupton.
It seemed like such a strange and unusual phenomena. Water so contaminated, it catches on fire.
I'm terrified. There are no other words for it. I am absolutely terrified.
Amy Ellsworth was so scared, she had her well water tested and found out the groundwater is contaminated with natural gas.
2, 3, 4. Wait, did I catch that one already? 1, 2, 3. Yeah, 4. Oh, it's hiding behind the tree.
Seven or eight.
Yeah.
Like a thief in here. But they said it wasn't their fault, and yet at the same time they're supplying you with water.
Well, yeah. Well, because they're being good neighbors.
Even though they don't have good neighbor programs.
I am the cup is half full person. I am the most optimistic. I believe in the good of people. I say this 3 times a day, all the time. I do believe in the good of people, and I do believe that things will work out the way that they're supposed to work out. I will stand up for what I believe in, and I will fight till the end, and there's no way you can even try to describe that to people. You can't make them understand how a part of who you are is being destroyed by the actions of others for selfish purposes. No one should ever have to go through what I went through and call them crying, begging for help, and be told no. And that's where the system is broken. Shock is one word for it. Terror is probably more effective.
That's because Amy is living in a home that could explode. And now we've learned she isn't the only one.
It just like popped and caught on fire. And
Renee McClure discovered her water is also flammable after she saw our story last night.
I want to know that we're safe.
Renee worries her family has been drinking the contaminated water for years.
Is it your bus?
Yeah, my school bus. It just seems like in the last year and a half, I'm never healthy. And I've always been healthy, so that's why I don't know what it is. I get headaches all of the time. And, you know, I mean, at least 2 or 3 headaches per week. Actually, the whole family gets headaches, but mine gets so bad where I just have to go lay down.
Which, since you moved here.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'd like to ask the Congress people why we're supposed to be living in Colorado. It's supposed to be such a green state.
Mm-hmm.
But yet we can't even get clean water out here. 1 or 2 glasses might not affect a person, but what about long term?
It says here you have trichlorobenzene in the water.
And what is that?
It's one of the volatile organic compounds that comes up with the production of the gas.
What blows my mind is that the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, I thought they were there to work for the people. They're not there to work for the people. They are there to work and help the oil and gas companies. And I asked him, who's there for the people? And he told me, nobody. Call an attorney. That's what they told me.
Driving to a different home now. This is like 5 or 6 people now in the same little town where their water is catching fire. And he's just going to their house and taking a lighter to the running water. And the water bangs and catches on fire. In the lower right-hand side of your screen, I put up some facts about fracking.
Colorado Oil and Gas Commission is aware of the situation and will probably be doing some additional testing in the area as soon as possible.
Well, the bottom line is, whose responsibility is it to take care of this problem?
They're really going to have to look a little deeper into this because it does seem to be more widespread than
Absolutely.
We thought.
Absolutely. Very scary. Okay. All right, Heidi, thanks.
Let's clear this up. I'm not here under the authority of EPA speaking on behalf of views that agency represents.
I will put Weston Wilson not speaking on behalf of the EPA, although he works for EPA.
In 2004, the EPA was investigating water contamination incidents due to hydraulic fracturing across the country. But a panel rejected the inquiry, stating that although hazardous materials were being injected underground, EPA did not need to investigate. Weston Wilson, a 20-year veteran of the EPA, wrote a letter to Congress objecting. He also noted that on the peer review panel that authored the report, 5 of 7 members appeared to have conflicts of interest and would benefit from the EPA's decision not to conduct a further investigation.
They came out with the patently ridiculous conclusion. They had showed it was toxic and then said it wasn't a risk. It made no sense, and only in an Orwellian world would you accept that.
From 1995 until 2000, when he became vice president, Dick Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton. One of the first things he did when he became vice president was to form what was known as the Energy Task Force. They met up to 40 times with industry leaders. They only met once with members from environmental groups. The Energy Task Force and a $100 million lobbying effort on behalf of the industry were significant in the passage of what's called the Halliburton Loophole to the Safe Drinking Water Act, which authorizes oil and gas drillers exclusively to inject known hazardous materials unchecked directly into or adjacent to underground drinking water supplies. It passed as a part of the Bush administration's Energy Policy Act of 2005.
So all science at that point stopped?
All science, all data, everything stopped. We were appalled about burying this kind of, maybe no pun intended, but burying this secret that it was known to be toxic. You know, when the president says to its bureaucracy, don't investigate, expedite things for industry, we do those jobs well, too. One could characterize this entire industry as having 100 years of history of purchasing those they contaminate. So they purchase the land, and often with an agreement of secrecy of somebody that's alleging they've been contaminated by oil and gas production. So the industry itself has that type of practice.
You're saying it's the industry itself should be proving it and not the people.
This is America. We shouldn't be assuming that corporations can keep a secret, especially when they're practicing in our backyard. So the onus should be on the industry to prove to the government that their practice is benign and not that assumption. What you could be picking up from these citizens is what we should be investigating, but we're not. We're still asleep at the wheel. And don't assume since Obama got elected that something's changed at the EPA yet in that regard. Even if they weren't true, they deserve an investigation. They're citizens of the United States. And they certainly don't deserve to be exposed to secret chemicals. It's not America. So I understand your question and your frustration, and you're seeing how this may be a pattern repeating itself. But so far, we're not on duty. We're not present as a government agency to answer your legitimate questions. And we must be directed to.
They're showing some tests about antifreeze being in the water. We have particular problems in embryos. I think it's telling
that it says extreme danger. Yeah. Extreme health hazard. Yeah, almost like
disease.
Having a loaded gun in your hand there, standing there.
Safe won't drink the water.
You can zoom in. Let me take this nice and slow.
I don't know why they're shooting a gun into the hills.
Cheese. Jeff and Rhonda Locker. They've been living here for at least 30 years. But at some point in the late 90s, there was a gas company re-stimulating a well out behind their house. Rhonda was out doing the wash. And the wash went black. They knew they had a small problem with the water. And there isn't a laundromat for miles.
All of a sudden, the washing machine plugged up, and the water that came out and flooded the back where the washing machine is was pure black. Black, complete black. Mm-hmm. And, of course, at that time, I went out and stopped Pumper when he came through the yard and asked him what he'd done to our water. And he says, well, we didn't do anything to it. And pursuing it further, I finally got water samples, and that's when we found out the water was totally unfit for consumption.
That fast?
Yeah, it was just immediate.
It's about right for a cool day. Yeah, you got it?
I'm going to pause this a second and back up a little bit and tell you what was happening here. There was a man in the backyard pumping chemicals into the ground to do fracking. And within minutes, their well water became black and unusable and plugged up their washing machine. I don't think without some of the pictures that's clear. Note, too, that on the right side of your screen, all these little things coming up, 70% of fracking fluid remains underground. I'll just put that up. It's from gaslandmovie.com. And this movie that you're watching has won all kinds of awards, special awards. Just incredible. And still the government refuses to do anything about these people's ruined property, ruined wells, ruined lives.
The Lockers threatened the gas company with a lawsuit. They settled for $21,000 to put in a reverse osmosis filtration system.
This is the well that was on the property when we bought it.
Uh-huh.
We're still using it, but it's the one that went bad.
Jeff and Rhonda Locker had to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
The day that I signed it, I even said to them, I just want you to know I may sign this, but if anyone asks me, I will not lie.
Now, they're so frustrated that they're breaking their sign.
This is our system. It pumps out of there, it pumps through the softener, it pumps through there, and it fills this 500-gallon tank. It's just a centrifugal pump. It goes through a real fine, I call it a filter, it's more like a membrane. We were actually drinking it for a while, but 4.5 years ago, Rhonda got really sick with an extreme neuropathy and is in a lot of pain. She just faded fast and had the bone pain. And she's been through spinal taps and everything to try to find a cause.
Jeff and Rhonda Locker found out that a reverse osmosis unit won't filter out glycol ethers. Glycol ethers eat the membranes inside of the filters.
We don't drink it anymore. We haul our water and we...
Tell me about hauling water. Where are you getting?
Walmart.
Buy it.
Like Jeff and Rhonda Locker, after a nearby frack job, Lewis Meek's water went bad. Started smelling like gas.
See, 2004, they drilled this well right over here. I don't know if you can see from here, it's 5.
Numerous water tests turned up various forms of hydrocarbons and glycol ethers. In Canada, the company doing the fracking claimed no responsibility. With his back against the wall, Lewis had no alternative but to try to drill a new water well on his property.
From 180, 160, you could smell gas. And he went in there and we got to 240. And when we put that joint on and started to try to blow it out, well, it came at us.
Loaded out of Lewis Meeks' water well for over 3 days. The Department of Homeland Security reported that over 3 million cubic feet of natural gas escaped into the atmosphere. Lewis had to get an injunction from a judge to get in Canada to cement the well, stop the flow, and to provide him with a replacement water source. The big green building next to Lewis's house contains two cisterns that in Canada fills up twice a week.
I can show you the water. So these are two big water tanks that they're filling up for you.
Why are they bringing it? Tell me. If nothing's wrong, why are they bringing it?
So you actually hired a hydrogeologist to figure out what was going on around here.
Yeah.
And what did he say?
He said that they got everything intermingled. When they do anything like frack it, they're going to intermingle everything.
You can already see that. You're going to see little pearls of stuff come out of it, like oil. I just already know when I'm over here.
And the water that comes out of Lewis Meek's original well is only good for some bizarre science experiments and brain-altering recreational activities.
Oh, man. Tell me you drink that.
Water.
No way. Tell me there ain't nothing wrong with this water.
It smelled like turpentine. That chemical smell that goes straight to your head and gets you dizzy almost immediately.
Here's the thing, you know, I think it's a criminal. What would happen if I took some chemicals like I got and took them to, like, the big bossy in Canada and dumped them in as well?
Yeah.
They'd have me in the pen so fast my head would spin. But look, they can come out here and do whatever they want to. And they don't even have to report it and tell us what they're putting in there.
The whole concept of democracy and looking out for the little guy does not apply here.
Exactly. I ain't not lying. I never seen such lying. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their word ain't no good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we was all raised that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your word ain't no good, you ain't no good. Mm-hmm. And you talk to these are grown men lying to you.
Right.
For what? For money. And that's it.
When we had ours tested with them test testing, they found glycol in it. It cost us $4,400.
Yeah, that's it. It's like a plastic.
Glycol ethers are odorless, colorless, and are a liquid chemical component of plastic.
Something definitely in it.
And Lewis took a blowtorch to his water. I think we found a cheaper way of testing for glycol ethers. Either that, or a secret Wyoming recipe for homemade plastic.
Here we go.
I like Lewis immediately. Cool 70s patterned mirrors, cowboy statues everywhere, and the most comfortable couch in the United States.
Ready?
That's good to see. Should be on the buffalo hide. That is fab. Wow.
John Fenton and his wife Kathy have 24 gas wells on their property, all of them visible from their front porch.
I was raised here, and at one time, there was nothing. I mean, there was no oil, nothing.
Now you have this, everywhere you can see.
Everywhere you can see. Yeah, and, like, we can really sell this place with the water situation and, well, look at it. We don't own our mineral rights.
Now, see this black cow right here, that little calf? That little calf's, you know, probably less than 12 hours old right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's a new one there. We've only got a certain, you know, amount of water wells to work with, and God, I don't know how they even drink it, to be honest with you. It's the damnedest smelling stuff, and comes out different colors all the time, but you got to use it sometimes.
I think we should strive to be the cleanest and the most environmentally conscious that we can. A lot of times it's right out in the middle of the field. You know, that's where we make more money. You see the green grass growing. That's money to us, you know, and that's fertilizer and that's feed for the cows. That's everything. And they tear up a football field-sized area and drill a hole out there, and they spread toxic chemicals. And then on top of that, you got gravel and rocks and big pieces of metal, and then they pipeline everywhere, and it just cuts us to pieces. There's no rhyme or reason to how they do things out here. They do it different on every hole. There's different people. Nobody's watching over them. You know, it's a free-for-all.
Todd Fenton describes his home being surrounded by venting condensate tanks. At times, the fumes from the condensate tanks are so strong, they surround the house in a cloud of toxic vapor.
And you can come out here when the sun's coming up, and the air is just brown. The first 100, 200 feet of air is like a brown blanket laying over the top of everything. And, you know, not only are all the animals in there breathing it and absorbing it through their skin, but all the people are too.
Kathy and her mother-in-law, who lives right down the road, suffers from headaches, dizziness, and a loss of smell and taste.
It's going to be, I know they say you have to let them drill. You know, you got to come to a compromise. You know, we already know that. We've already compromised as much as we can compromise. If they do any more drilling out here, it's just going to force people, you know, it's going to force us out of business, off our land. The less people they have to deal with out here, the more they can drill. But they can drill whether we like it or not. It doesn't seem to matter that we're affected. Humans are being affected.
If I'd known what it was going to be like, I don't know that I'd brought my family here. I hate to say that because, you know, to some people might see this and wonder how I could like this, but this is my way of life, you know. My father and my grandfather were the old-time cowboys, you know. And my grandfather on my mom's side, they're farmers in Nebraska. This is my family heritage, and my wife's, this is their family farm, you know. We're proud of this. But, by God, if your way of life is being besieged and your health is under attack, I don't know what else you can do. I don't know where the hell I'd go, though. Where else can I go? This is happening everywhere. That's the biggest thing I want people to know is you're not alone if this is happening to you, because I'm in the same boat you are. And what we need to do is we need to get together and we need to stand up and we need to speak with a unified voice and we need to stand up to these assholes. These little guys are really enjoyable to watch and be around. We want to raise the
They're
best
talking
most
about the new calves
that we can raise, you know, and by God, if you're breathing in dirty air and you're drinking water that could be tainted, what's going into these girls and what's coming out in those calves, you know? You got to be sure that what you're putting in them to raise that meat is as pure as it can be, you know? Cute as they are, in a year or two, they're going to be on somebody's dinner plate. Actually, this next well we're coming up on here was probably one of the worst ones for Kathy and I. It was a neat little secluded spot. You could go have a picnic, you know, if we wanted to come back and just talk and where nobody knew where we were at. It was right here, and it was all these cool-looking kind of rock formations out here, and it was just gone. Everybody kind of has one of those, and ours is under a dozer, you know. It just disappeared. It took them one day, and it was gone. You couldn't recognize it anymore. It's amazing that what took Mother Nature millions of years to build can be destroyed in a few hours with a piece of heavy machinery.
was lucky that between John Fenton's house and where I was going was Wind River Canyon, one of the most beautiful places in the United States, almost enough to keep my mind off of where I was going next. I was going to one of those moonscapes I'd seen in the photographs, one of the biggest and most productive gas fields in the United States. The Jonah Gas Field is at the foothills of the Grand Tetons, just to the south, Yellowstone Park and the Bridger Teton National Forest. Sublette County, at 4,935 square miles, the county is about the same size as the entire state of Connecticut. The population is about 6,000 people. That means there's about one person per square mile. Much of Sublette County is BLM land, Bureau of Land Management land, our public trust, your land and mine. You can camp anywhere on BLM land because it belongs to you, the public. The BLM's stated mission is to sustain the health, diversity, and productivity of the public lands for the use and enjoyment of present and future generations. The Energy Task Force, headed by Vice President Dick Cheney, asked the BLM in 2001 to find ways to open new federal lands to oil and gas leasing, and in what some call the greatest transfer of public lands to private hands in history, Dick Cheney persuaded the BLM to lease millions of acres to gas companies for exploration and drilling. The derrick tower that you see is the drill rig. The drill rig moves in for 3 to 4 weeks, drilling a hole that's anywhere between 11 and 8,000 feet down to the shale formation. Each well completion, that is, the initial drilling phase plus the first frack job, requires 1,150 truck trips. The breakdown goes like this. Drilling rig mobilization and drill pad and road construction, 10 to 45 truckloads. Drilling rig, 30 truckloads. Drilling fluid and materials, 25 to 50 truckloads. Drilling equipment, casing, drill pipe, etc., 25 to 50 truckloads. Completion rig, mobilization, and demobilization, about 15 truckloads. Completion fluid and materials, 10 to 20 truckloads. Completion equipment, 5 truckloads. Hydraulic fracture equipment, pump trucks, and tanks equals 150 to 200 truckloads. And here's the big one, hydraulic fracture water for each well, 400 to 600 tanker trucks, 400 to 600 tanker trucks. Hydraulic fracture sand, 20 to 25 trucks. Flow back water removal, 200 to 300 truckloads, which means that all the water that goes down, only about half of it comes back up. What you see here is the flow back pit of what you call flow back water, frack water, or what the industry likes to call produced water. Before the water can be hauled away and disposed of somewhere, it has to be emptied into a pit, an earthen pit or a clay pit, sometimes a lined pit, but a pit where a lot of it can seep right back down into the ground. Colored flags. I have no idea what those are there for. Maybe it's the grand opening of a new pit.
Showing some of the pits, and he's trying to gather water out of one.
I mentioned the problem of water removal, 200 to 300 trucks per well. That's a lot of water to clean. To get around this problem, the industry employs evaporation sprayers. In the flowback pits, the water is sprayed into the air in the sunlight so that it evaporates faster. Now, of course, you're probably saying to yourself, that's insane. That water contains all the fracking chemicals, which are toxic, and all the volatile organics, which are also toxic. They create ozone, hazardous air pollutants, and they fall down in the form of chemical or acid rain on the grasslands. Each well site is equipped with a mini refinery and storage unit. What you see here is what's called a separator. When the gas comes up out of the ground, it comes up wet. The separator heats it up to 212 and boils off the water. The BTEX chemicals, the volatile organics, benzene, toluene, xylene, and a host of others, are all evaporated right there on the site. The gas is then pumped into a pipeline to go through further stages of refining. The big tanks you see next to all the gas wells are condensate tanks. The condensate is stored in the tank until a trucker can come and haul it off. The condensate can be anywhere from produced water, which is unusable, to a low-grade jet fuel. It's just sitting there, like a big explosive battery, steaming off volatile organics directly into the atmosphere 24 hours a day. Numerous air pollution advisories in Sublette County were posted by the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality, stating that ozone in the air had reached unsafe levels. Ozone's good in the upper atmosphere. It keeps out the radiation of the sun. But down on the ground, it burns holes in your lungs. Sublette County, the size of Connecticut, 6,000 people, had air worse than Los Angeles on a typical day. Right there's a pronghorn antelope. Pronghorn antelope is not a part of gas development. But the Pinedale Anticline and the Jonah gas fields are directly in the path of the 1,000-year-old migration corridor of pronghorn antelope, mule deer, and sage grouse. And yeah, each of these species is endangered and has suffered a significant decline of their populations since 2005. After a while, a gas rig just seemed like a car made in 1890. A car without a windshield, without safety bolts to hold the seats in, without an airbag, without seat belts, without crash test ratings. Something fundamentally unsafe. If you think about a car made today, there are probably thousands and thousands of safety features. Looking at these rigs, I couldn't help but imagine of the hundreds of safety features that might be implemented, including harnessing volatile organics, storing toxic wastes off-site or not on the ground, non-toxic fracking fluids, hundreds of ways that we might improve upon, or just say the hell with it. Can't we build a solar panel instead? I zipped around. I got lost on the snaking, winding roads that lead in and out of the gas fields that aren't marked. Each access road leading to one, to another site, to another site, to another site. Nobody was monitoring it. I could drive right up wherever I wanted. It was BLM land. It was mine. It belonged to every United States citizen. No one told me to leave. No one told me I shouldn't be there. And apparently, there were no restrictions on banjo playing either.
Friends that couldn't speak for themselves, mostly, because of non-disclosure agreements.
people who were in lawsuits or who had settlements that stipulated once they received their money, they could no longer go public with their stories. Tara had one friend who hadn't signed a non-disclosure agreement.
My great friend, Dee Hoffmeister. We had just celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary. We came back, and as we drove in the yard, there was this huge rig and semis. And the smell was so intense. The benzene and was so intense that we ran for our deck. The deck was enveloped, and it had this big gray cloud. It was like it was being held in on the deck with this cloud. So we were in the house, I'd say mostly at the most 15 minutes when I got up and passed out. And you get pains all over your body. You don't know why you're getting the pains. And then they come and go, and they'll show up in another part of your body. So I got to the point where I was walking with a four-pronged steel cane because I couldn't walk on my own.
After her first big knockdown exposure, she wasn't in very good shape, but then just a couple of years ago.
Dee Hoffmeister's gas well exploded. The condensate tanks caught fire, and the rig was consumed.
At 3 a.m, we heard these pops. Our son got up to go look outside, and he had to run back in because the deck was so hot, he was burning. And I opened my eyes, and I couldn't keep them open because everything started spinning. And then the next day, I was even worse, and he took me to emergency. We had our son and his wife and four kids living upstairs here in the house when this all started. And all four of them got asthma. And two of my daughter's children got asthma. They were on nebulizers in the winter to breathe. We had beautiful playgrounds, but we got to the point where you could never leave your kids out to play.
I kept getting in car after car, hearing symptom after symptom. My first day in Garfield County, I did 16 hours worth of interviews. And finally, I got a chance to sit down with Theo Colborne, winner of 5 Rachel Carson Awards, a Time Magazine Environmentalist of the Year, and Congressional Fellow. Her accolades are too numerous to count.
We've begun to look at what's being used to drill a well, data that the government should be collecting but isn't collecting. We've been able to get our hands on some of that.
Because of the exemptions, fracking chemicals are considered proprietary, like the special sauce for a Big Mac or the secret formula for Coca-Cola. The only reason we know anything about the fracking chemicals is because of the work of Theo Colborne. By chasing down trucks, combing through material safety data sheets, and collecting samples, Theo has identified 596 different chemicals in 900 chemical products.
Every environmental law we wrote to protect public health is ignored. But the neurological effects are very insidious.
3 years ago, I started getting really dizzy.
At first, you may just have headaches. Then the next thing you might have ringing in your ears.
I thought I had an inner ear infection. I went to my doctor and she's kind of, your ears are clean.
Or you may be a little disoriented, or you may feel a little dizzy.
So they sent me down for a CAT scan.
But eventually, you may feel what is called peripheral neuropathy. And when you get to this stage, you have irreversible brain damage.
For the last 4 years, I have these lesions in my brain. I don't know where they came from.
You may begin to get swelling.
I hurt everywhere in my body, my legs, my feet, everywhere.
Your extremities, especially the arms and the legs.
I couldn't move. I couldn't reach my face to eat.
And never know where the pain is going to be. The pain can be excruciating. Think about the workers or the people whose yards or backyards or within 1,000 feet of their home have a well pad.
They can't get rid of the tanks and the fumes are all the time.
They're inhaling these chemicals 24/7 around the clock.
They're just not. I don't know. I can't smell anything.
And you lost your sense of smell. I'm telling you.
That is one of the side effects of hydrogen sulfide exposure. I don't smell the cat box.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. For 2 years now, I haven't smelled flour.
Taste, I can't taste hardly nothing.
I can taste salty and I can taste sweet.
Salty, I can taste it. Sweet, I can taste it.
But I don't get any of the subtleties or aromas of food. It's like all texture for me now. Yeah, it's not good.
I go out and I talk to the
the bosses, you know, the men who are overlooking what's going on, and even their supervisors, the public relations people that talk to us from the industry, they are so surprised. They look at me as if I'm crazy when I ask them, where are they mixing in the chemicals now? Oh, we're not using any chemicals. Well, if we are, they're safe. Even the bosses don't know what they're telling those men to handle. Once the public hears the story, and they'll say, well, why aren't we out there monitoring? We can't monitor until we know what they're using. There's no way to monitor. You can't.
Maybe my interview with Theo, driving around, was clear that there had been no planning at all. All the gas drilling infrastructure was spread out like a teenager's bedroom. A pipe yard over here, a waste pit hidden behind a mountain over there. Thank God my last interview had a sense of humor.
So the other night I had this dream that I was in this high school, or this middle school maybe. I was in this restroom, and there was feces everywhere. I was appalled. Somebody, by God, is responsible for this. It's the principal. So I was trying to gather up this crap, and I was handling it. I was trying to put it in bags. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to present it to the principal. I'm going to put it in a bag. I'm going to put it in a really pretty bag. And then I'm going to put ribbons on it because I really want to get his attention. I want to drop this bag of crap on his desk, and I want to shock him so he thinks it's a present, but when he opens it, it's crap. And it'll get his attention, and I'll take responsibility. I mean, God, how symbolic is this dream? So you know what? Finally, it dawns on me. Crap is crap, no matter what kind of package you put it in. That was my lesson. That was my message. It ain't pretty anymore. There ain't no way you can make it pretty, Josh. Stop trying to make it pretty. Just do it. Just show it for what it is. 115 million cubic feet of gas was estimated and acknowledged to have blown out into the west of I Creek.
It's on up beyond that, and it's on down also. It was all the way down probably a quarter of a mile, half a mile. Because it's really bubbling out here, just like Steve said. It's like a Pepsi bottle.
They're showing a creek and the gas coming up out of the creek, and they're lighting it with matches.
Keep your face out.
That's the Valley Creek. That is where the seep occurred in 2008 in the summer. There was dead crawdad. There was dead rabbits, dead birds, which I still have the bodies.
You have the bodies?
I have the bodies in the freezer.
House?
Yeah.
In the freezer?
Because even DOW hasn't been able in almost a year to figure out who to send them to.
And this is all in Canada?
Yeah.
So you feel like you don't want to sit down or get in the water?
Yeah, because you don't know. You don't know. My dad, he was down here all the time in the summertime and drinking out of the creek. The creek was good creek water.
Yeah.
The year of the seep, it was discovered in April. He'd been drinking out of the creek for a month. He was dead 2 years later of pancreatic cancer.
There are no weeds in the funnel. We're taking the weeds out. We're just going to do the gas same way, cover the seep. Now, the whole seep's not covered. It's still bubbling all around us. All right, you ready? Now, that's still burning yellow. Now, this is 12 inches high, and the flame's going up probably another 12 inches, so you got 2 feet there.
Were they fined for the Divide Creek seep?
Yeah, biggest fine in Colorado history. $371,000. I don't think it bankrupted the company. The corporate business model is to come into an area, develop it as fast as you can, and if you trash anything, you make the people who you impact prove it. You make them argue it in a court of law. And the last person standing gets fought off and you move on.
I tried to keep anger and sorrow at bay. But the moment I knelt down at Divide Creek, looked upstream, and noticed the bend, it reminded me of home. and I broke apart. She says she has the dead birds and the frogs that were in the creek in her freezer. I want to see them. Let's go get the rest of the story.
God, you remember that dream? This is it. There's one bird. In the summer of 2008, all this black stuff with diesel, organic stuff came up and came into the creek. We had a kind of a mass die-off. Ended up in the freezer as specimens.
That's a dove.
And this is the rabbit. He was right down there by the sea. Right down there where propane and ethane was found in the ground water. This just broke my heart. Look at this little guy. He didn't even have a chance.
Did you ever think that you'd be freezing rabbits, doves, and animals in your freezer? That you wanted to get autopsies?
No. That's probably one of the creepiest things. This is so foreign and creepy and alien to me. To have these critters just die and leave, to try to preserve them, it's creepy and weird and unnatural. And then put them in that bag.
All right. In this Walmart bag?
Yeah.
You can't get this at Walmart.
That say, you know
if
of.
If you really wanted that you know of. All right, thanks.
I'll see you later, sister. Right. Be positive.
You too.
Stop this movie and let you folks know that we have been going an hour and 15 minutes. I have scheduled this show for 2 hours, but I think the movie makes the point. For those of you who want to go back and look at it, we're at 1 hour and 9 minutes on the film, about two-thirds of the way through. I thought maybe we could have a bit of a discussion about what's already happened here. What I would like to do is train some people to help decode these chemicals, or at least what's escaping in the air, and by large speakers provide the antidotes to these areas. I don't know exactly how that could be done. Yes, Dr. Emoto, that would be a good way to do it. Our thoughts. But these people are desperate. I think it's well beyond where they can do it with their thoughts. They're having enough trouble just surviving. And as some people have written to me privately here, and I've responded to everyone, that this is a way for the government, at least the U.S. government, to pollute all the water and look their... where there are Appalachian people, where there are people in the hills that have their own wells and waters and where some of the fresh water comes from in the Appalachian Mountains, they're beginning to go in and try to pollute all the water table. I'm going to try to get a hold of this Theo person and make that a priority to get in touch with her and say, we don't know exactly what we can do, but I'm wondering what would happen if we can somehow put non-polluted air back in their environment by frequencies. just as they're polluting the air we breathe with Fukushima, they're polluting water, Mother Earth. And I think our government people have their hole in the head and a hole in the ground. It's very telling when they won't even drink the water. They're trying to tell these people it's okay. Again, we're being used as guinea pigs. Richard, if you have the availability of your phone, you can call. We'll put you on speakerphone. Richard, who's been with us for 3 or 4 years now, he was very instrumental in bringing this idea of fracking to me. And they weren't doing any of it here, so I am so busy I wasn't paying any attention to what he was trying to tell me. But now they're bringing it to my front door. They're bringing it to these people's backyards. And I guess once you give up your mineral rights, or in this case, the mineral rights of public land, they just go in and pretty much take what they want and create a lot of money in the process. Now, remember Halliburton and Cheney and how they're involved in these mercenaries in the war? Let's do something to create a war so that we can go in and get our guys paid $1,000 a day, and we'll probably charge the government $2,500 a day for our people. So it's just a matter of here's two ideas and how to make a lot of money, and notice that it went through the Bush administration and into the Obama administration. So this is not anything that is one political party or another. This is money in your pocket. And I think money transcends political affiliation. But what can we do about it? These people are getting sick. Can we help them? Do we have enough resources to help them? Do we have enough people who would be willing to begin to help put a project together? To get in touch with a documentary maker, I am wondering if Richard, who brought this to my attention in the first place, John Hutchinson did the Gulf of Mexico, yes, and we figured out what those frequencies were and sent them to them. I don't know if they used our frequencies, but I think we could figure out the frequencies for what's going on here. If we can get in touch with the worst of the worst here, I know benzene, for one, we've been able to antidote, and toluene, because the guy said it smelled like turpentine, and that's a major ingredient in toluene. We have been able to detox those from the body at a cellular level. That's the beauty of bioacoustics. It goes in and works on the cellular level. And I'm wondering if we could just put in the air the first chemical made when conception takes place, the ATP, and see if we could allow the body to clear itself. Anybody heard, last time I heard, John Hutchinson was ran out of the Gulf of Mexico. Was anybody able to follow that and see what was going on? I will try to get in touch with the documentary maker. If any of you know how to do that and get in touch with the documentary maker. There is a site. Let me move that over. I would encourage all of you to go back and listen to the rest of this, starting at about a minute and eight seconds there. This thing has won all kinds of awards, reviews. I'm going to open some of the reviews here. Media highlights. We should be able to find some people based on this. And for those of you that are with us, we'll go through and send you some of these links, or if you know links, please send them to us. I don't know if we could get them for our radio show, but we could certainly ask that. Here is press, awards, media. scientific facts, Gasland maps. Take contact. Here is a contact piece. And I will send them information and say that we would like him on our show. Media interview request, university conference, rallies. And I would like to play this movie here. I don't know if we can, because the people who bought our building, I think, are involved up to their ears in trying to make money off of this, too. So if you could go look at that site, GaslandTheMovie.com. But we will certainly look at this. The fact that they were able to get the mineral rights in public land, the fact that they got themselves exempted from any environmental scrutiny, Clean Air or Water Act, they don't have to pay any attention to any of this, and they're trying to bury it. It needs to come forward. And if we can help these people who have cancer and polluted air and whatever, if we could find some commonality and then just set speakers, large speakers, out. Remember, Newt wanted to eliminate EPA because of its corruption? Might he champion this, too? You're talking about Newt Gingrich? I don't know. I could get in touch with Judge Napolitano and see where he is with this. But like our project with the firemen, they're likely going to come back and say, well, you do all the work and we'll let you. You know, with the firemen, they wanted us to examine like 17,000 people and provide all of the equipment. I don't think people know that, except for a few donations, we are all self-funded. Grants have dried up now, and even with the last grant that we did for the Army, they never paid us the last $27,000 of that, saying that they just didn't have the money. Tough. So here we are looking at take it to Nappy, too. What is Nappy? Take it to Nappy. I don't know what that means, guys. But I will try to get in touch with Judge Napolitano. They may take this up. This is atrocious. Yeah, I think it's Napolitano, but that's okay. Oh, Nappy is Napolitano. Oh, okay. Yes, I will. Our attorney lives like next door in the same neighborhood, so they know each other well, so we'll try to get in touch that way. If you have any ideas about how to put all of this together so we can help these people, I'm open to suggestion. Know that it's going to be a labor of love until we can get it funded in some way. And maybe the first couple of families we do will have to be free until they can see that we can really make a difference. I want to help clean up their bodies, their lives, their farms, their cattle, their water, and I think that's possible with bioacoustics. I'm going to stop the show at that point. If it hasn't already stopped with Blog Talk, I'm going to go in and look at that and see. I can't even find it now. Blog Talk Studio. It is still going on. That is wonderful. But please stay in touch. I will try to find some people that will help us decode these chemicals and find out more. And I think this Edith person would be a great place to start. Thank you for being with us, and we'll talk to you later.